You are listening to
Rural Voices,
the Rural Youth Europe podcast.
Hello and welcome back to Rural Voices. It is series 2, episode 2, and today we are asking the question, what will rural communities look like for the next generation? This episode, I have a trip down memory lane with Michael Schwab, past Rural Youth Europe chairman from Germany, reminiscing about his time as chair over 10 years ago and discussing how the topics raised at our events have evolved over time.
When we started in our company, when we started with video meetings, people said, oh, this is much easier. And I said, yes, 15 years ago on the board of Rural Youth Europe, we had international video meetings. It's all been there.
I also have a catch up with Isabel Hall Wilkins from 4-H in Sweden. She now has children of her own, so we're looking to the future, discussing what rural areas will be like for the next generation.
When I work at 4-H Farm, I have like almost 100 kids a week there. And I see so much kids feel so bad because they not feel that they are good enough. On 4-H farms or 4-H in particular, you just to be yourself, and that's the most important thing.
Finally, I'm joined by Niall Evans, our Vice Chairman, to play round 2 of Campfire Stories, 2 Truths and 1 Lie. We are joined by 3 past participants from across Europe.
Hello Europe, this is Denmark calling.
Hello Europe, this is Switzerland calling.
Hello Europe, this is Georgia calling.
Make sure you listen to the end to find out which one is telling the lie. We have embarrassing toilet stories, oversleeping travel buddies, and spiritual rituals involving Swiss cheese. But first, here's what happened when I caught up with Michael from Germany.
You are listening to
Rural Voices,
the Rural Youth Europe podcast.
Michael Schwab, past chairman of Rural Youth Europe, welcome to Rural Voices. It's a pleasure to have you on.
Yeah, my pleasure as well. Good to talk about Rural Youth Europe and to be in contact again.
It would be great if you could start by telling us a bit about your background with Rural Youth Europe. You were chairman 10 years ago, is that right?
I would have to think it over. Yeah, I think it was elected chairman in the European Rally in Sweden in 2010 and stayed on the board until 2012. And the 4 years before, I was regional representative and then vice chairman for 2 years.
And looking back to your time as chair, what were some of your highlights?
One of the nicest memories I have of the time is the second last event I attended myself. That was the autumn seminar in 2011, which took place in my hometown in Plettenberg in Germany. We had about 30 participants there, and an interesting topic, but also the chance to show around to where I'm from. And this is one of the nice things always that you get to know how people really live, because as a tourist, I think you see a lot of other countries. But as a Rural Youth Europe attendee, you learn a lot more because you get to know people.
And I assume before you were Rural Youth Europe chairman, you were an extremely active member of BDL in Germany.
Yes, I was for about 10 years on board of one of the regional organizations, and also was a regional chairman for many years, and also was in my club Landjugend Bremke for many, many years. And that was how one joined Rural Youth, through building the Easter bonfire. That was the greatest activities I've ever had in Rural Youth. And we did it for many years, building a huge Easter bonfire several weeks before Easter. And that was something where all the boys and girls from the village came together for many weekends before Easter and built on this huge fire. And then on Sunday, you burn it and everybody was there. That was just a fantastic community event. And you met all the people from the village, heard their stories, helped them in the garden, getting the wood, and so on and so on. So that was how I came in. And then there were many more activities to do. And so I got more involved. Yeah.
Now, this episode is all about the future of rural areas and, you know, how the issues that young people are facing may have changed over time. Now, looking back at your time as chair, 10 years ago, what were some of those issues that were being addressed at your events?
Many things we worked on had to do with the employability of young people. So how can you learn skills that will not only help you in your private life, and which are not only fun to learn, but which also help you in your later working life. Of course, it's not the only purpose of an organization of young people to train them for jobs. It's also to have fun, to deal with the topics they want to deal with. But if it makes fun and you learn something, that's even better, I think. And so we had a long time project, and many activities over many years were part of this the Youth Employment Action, we called it. So many of the seminars and rallies we organized dealt with skill topics and how to train them. And for example, the seminar I mentioned in my hometown, the title was Volunteering Makes Your CV Smile. And it was about how can youth organizations support their members in telling other people about the things they've learned in during the activity in the organization, and how can so they not only have these skills but also promote them.
Yes, yeah, and I totally agree with that. We've said it on the podcast before, you learn so many skills being a part of a rural organization, but sometimes we just forget to tell people about it, especially when we're looking for jobs.
This is something in, for example, my local club, we every year we organized a huge party for about 1,000 people with a rock band. And so many people said, oh, rural youth, they're making this party for with rock bands and a lot of beer drinking. What kind of free time activity is that? What do they learn there? And then I said, well, have you ever organized a party for 1,000 people? Have you made a contract with a band? Have you rented a hall? Have you organized about 40, 50 people helping with all the different things who had to be done there? If that's not learning skills in a very, in a great way, and yeah, and if the people who come out, if they haven't learned anything from that, yes, then you have to consider this.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And it's exactly the same in young farmers in the UK. Those skills that you learn through organising events in your organisation, you can apply in later life for so many different things. So moving on, 10 years or so since you were last chairman, more recently, Rural Youth Europe have been addressing issues such as mental health, LGBTQ plus issues. Do you think 10 years ago, these are the kind of issues our member organisations would have been tackling?
The topic of mental health was, for example, something we talked about in the study session in Budapest as well, in the context of intergenerational solidarity, where we had the idea that, for example, loneliness is a problem that causes, that tends to cause mental health issues. So at the time, this was already discussed. The LGBTQ plus issues were not so, how to say, I think were not so present in the organization, or were not brought up that much. The young people in WLL, my regional organization, and also on the European level, were more interested in these other topics like skills, leadership training, and these kind of things. But yes, so they were not brought up as topics by the member organization in that time.
Yeah. And I guess that's the exciting nature of our organizations. At the end of the day, they are member-led organizations, so they're always going to evolve. Mm. And the issues that we address, yeah, and what we want the future of rural areas to look like is going to change depending on what we feel is important. Do you think the pandemic will have a lasting impact on rural areas?
Yeah, of course, the pandemic leads to estrangement. People do not know each other that well any longer. And I think the big strength of rural areas is that you have that people know each other very well, and that you have strong networks. And everything that weakens these networks and these strong connections between amongst the people, of course, weakens rural areas. But I don't want to be too pessimistic as well, because there are many many good things coming from the time of a pandemic as well. For example, the five boys I was best friends with during my time in my local rural youth club. Now, three of them still live in our old town. One is the farmer next door, and two others, and a third one is a fourth one is living far away in one direction. I'm living far away in the other direction now. But now we regularly meet on Zoom or any something else, and have a chat and have a beer in the evening, something which we hadn't done for in this regularity for quite not a while before.
yeah.
the pandemic.
And that's definitely a positive that we've seen in Rural Youth Europe as well. It's definitely been great to be able to catch up with people online more often. In the UK, there has also been a huge influx in people moving from the city to rural areas now that working from home has become the norm. Is this happening in Germany too?
Yes, I think so. There are many people who can now work from home 4 or 5 days, 3 to 5 days a week, don't have to go to work every day. But I think it also, what you also see now is things which rural youth organizations have addressed, I think, throughout Europe. The infrastructure, especially the technical infrastructure in rural areas, still is lacking behind these technical infrastructure in the big cities. And all these things with remote working and so on and so on, they could have been there 10 years ago already. When we started in our company, when we started with video meetings, people said, oh, this is much easier. And I said, yes, 15 years ago on the board of Rural Youth Europe, we had international video meetings. It's all been there. I remember that my friend Grant Woodburn, he didn't have any internet at home, or not very good. So he had to go up on drive his car up on a mountain to have reception on the phone and to make it there. I remember discussion on the board. Grant, what's your opinion on this? Oh, wait a second, I'm driving. I think these technical developments, which have been addressed for many, many years now, that people didn't listen to rural youth organizations and other organizations fighting for rural areas, this pays off badly now. And maybe now someone listens. And we can see that many of the advantage aspects, the beautiful landscape you can live in, the neighbors you have, the good life in rural areas will become more visible to people, and these advantages of rural life will become better known.
Yeah, and hopefully this will be the push that is needed to encourage improved infrastructure and that crucial broadband connection. I think that's a really good point to wrap up the interview on. Thank you so much, Michael, for giving up your time to chat. It was really nice to catch up and reminisce.
It's been a pleasure to talk about old times, and I wish Rural Youth Europe all the best and keep on fighting for rural areas.
You are listening to
Rural Voices,
the Rural Youth Europe podcast.
Thank you, Michael, for that catch up. The reason behind the topic of this episode is due to an initiative by the European Commission, which is all about creating a long-term vision for rural areas. They did a public consultation last year, and over 50% of respondents stated that infrastructure is the most pressing need for rural areas, which is very much in line with what Michael was saying. Next, I chatted to Isabel from Sweden, who is also no stranger to Rural Youth Europe. As someone who works for 4-H in Sweden, as well as being a new mum, it was really interesting hearing her perspective. Hey Isabel, welcome to Rural Voices. Thank you so much for giving up your time to come on the podcast.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
So why don't you start by introducing yourself, and what is your background with 4-H in Sweden?
Yeah, I'm Isabel Hall Wilkens. I'm working and are like a leader also in 4-H. I have been in 4-H from I was 7 years old. I started to take care of the rabbits and then I were stuck.
And the rest was history.
So later on when I graduated, I go study for working with young people. So when I graduated from that, I take a work at a 4-H farm in Kalmar that I'm working now also.
And what does your job now entail? What's your day-to-day job?
Right now, I'm on maternity leave. I'm home with 2 kids now. My daughter Astrid is 1.5 years old, and my son Otto is almost 2 months now. At the moment I'm home, but every week we are at the 4-H farm as well.
Oh, brilliant. And they must be keeping you very busy.
Yeah, they are. Oh God, look at me. under bags under my eyes. I don't sleep at night.
It's fine. This is a podcast, so no one can see.
Yeah, that's good. That's really good.
And they must love visiting the 4-H farm.
Oh, they love it. Oh, Otto, he's just sleeping during the visit. But Astrid, she's running everywhere to the every animal she loves to visit the farm.
And in today's episode, we're thinking about the future of rural areas. What are rural areas going to look like for that next generation? And what kind of issues need to be addressed? Is there anything in particular which is particularly important to you?
Well, I think it's self-confidence to take care of yourself and believe in yourself. Now it's a big talk in Sweden, health, like on the inside with the anxiety and stuff like that. And that's a big question that I feel a lot for, because I see when I work at 4-H Farm, I have like almost 100 kids a week there. And I see so much kids in young ages feel so bad because they not feel that they are good enough. On 4-H farms or 4-H in particular, you just to be yourself, and that's the most important thing.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And all these kids that come to the 4-H farms, are they mainly from rural areas or have they come from the city?
Yeah, most of them are from the city. Like the 4-H farm is in a city. We have like 60,000 people who live in that city. So we have like the rural area in the middle of the city. So we have taken the rural areas to, hello, look at this. This is how this city looked before.
Yeah, I absolutely love that. And I think other organisations could learn a lot from what you do in Swedish 4-H about educating people that are outside the farming rural community. It's already been mentioned on this episode that the pandemic has created some opportunities for organisations to do stuff online to reach people in more isolated areas. But what do you think will be the long-term impact of the pandemic on rural areas? Is it a positive one?
That's a good question. When you sent over the question to me, I sat and have a discussion with my husband. We met through 4-H. And we just thought about that question, because now people in Sweden, for a fact, they have opened their eyes to the rural areas and, oh, we have this and it's for free and we can go here all the time. But I think it's the short term. People will feel this now, but in 5 years, they will forget about the rural area if the world will go back to what it was before. I think that, sadly. But for now, I think it's good. But for long term, I don't see that. I don't think so. And that's a hard question to fix, how we can do this long term as well.
Yeah.
And I don't have the answer for it, sadly.
Yeah, I mean, it is a tricky problem to have to tackle. And if you had the opportunity to sit down with members of the European Parliament or politicians in Sweden to make sure young rural voices are heard so that, you know, we can have positive change for the next generation, what would you say to them?
I will say, talk to us and listen to us, because they talk about rural areas, but they don't talk to us in the rural areas. And that's, I think, the biggest problem they have. They will talk how we do the rural areas more living and how we get people to move there, but they don't ask the people who live there now what they want and how we can do this more attractive for people who live in the city to come out here, because we have the facts.
Yeah, absolutely. And that is exactly why it's so important that that level of communication is there. Looking to the future, I can only assume that one thing for certain is that your children will definitely be involved with 4-H.
Yeah, they may be. Oh, Astrid is already a member. we needed to fix the member system when I should pay for her membership, because you couldn't do so young people to members. So she was member when she was, I think, 2 weeks old. Poor child. So she have nothing to say about this. But now she loves to be at the farm, so she will be in forage as for long she wants. If she wants to do something else, she can do that as well.
And you never know, one day she might be at a Rural Youth Europe event, who knows?
I hope. I will say go for it. If she gets the opportunity, I hope she takes them.
Oh, well, thank you very much, Isabel. It's been really, really nice chatting to you. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
You are listening to
Rural Voices,
the Rural Youth Europe podcast.
Hi, Niall. Welcome to Rural Voices.
Hi, Dan. Thanks for having me.
Is this your first time on the podcast?
I believe so, yeah, surprising really, but my first time.
So for those that don't know you, I'm sure there's plenty listening that do already know you, but for those that don't, can you introduce yourself and say what role you've got in Rural Youth Europe?
Yeah, sure. My name's Niall Evans. I'm the vice chairman of the board. I'm from Wales, so I'm a member of Wales Young Farmers. Yeah, I've been on 2 events, been to a third as a member of the GA. I've sort of known Rural Youth Europe now for about coming up to 4 years. So it's become sort of part of my life, really, and getting more and more involved.
Yeah, so was your first experience of Rural Youth Europe, was that the rally in Latvia in 2017?
It was indeed. Yes. Some experience.
Yeah, that was my first experience of Rural Youth Europe as well. Could you have imagined back then when you were at that event that just 4 years later you would be the vice chairman of the whole organisation?
I had no idea at all, to be honest. It was, I think, coming into that rally, it was coming in blind and not really having too much of an understanding of the organisation. I've like heard about the rally, members of the club, members of Wales have been to the rally and said, oh yeah, it's a fantastic event. Not really sure what to expect. It's surprising where you get to when you really put your mind to it.
Yeah, exactly. Right, well, you are here with a very important job to do. Back by popular demand, we have our campfire stories, 2 truths and 1 lie. Let's pretend we are around a campfire. We've got an Englishman and Welshman, me and you, and we also have members from Denmark, Switzerland and Georgia. 3 stories from 3 past participants. One of them is a complete and utter lie. Understood?
Cracking.
Right, let's start with Helena from Denmark.
Hello, Europe. This is Denmark calling. My name is Helena Sommer from 4-H Denmark, and this is my story. Wednesday evening, my best friend and I went to a restaurant. But the time went by, the restaurant was closing, and we started walking home. Out of nowhere, my stomach made some weird noises, and I got a sudden urge to go to the restroom. But everything, and I mean everything, in the town had closed down for that evening. I couldn't run, really. I couldn't. So I had to squeeze my butt together and hope for the best. One single restaurant wasn't yet closed, luckily for me. I went over and yelled to the waiter, please, sir, please let me in. Please let me borrow your toilet, please. Some people looked at me with some strange eyes, and I wonder why, because 15 minutes later, I came out. Without a single word, the waiter pointed at the door and closed it behind me. That was my story. I hope you liked it. Bye.
Oh, what can you say about that?
Helena from Denmark. I'm sure Denmark, 4-H and Denmark are very proud of that story, Helena. I do enjoy the fact that at the end of all of that, she just said, I hope you like it.
Well, yeah, how else do you round off such a story? I don't think there's much better way, really, is there?
Do we think, because you've been on a rally with Helena before, do you think this is a story that is likely?
Oh, I don't know. I suppose I don't really want to pass judgment until I've heard more, really.
Fair enough.
I will bear with it. I suppose it could be plausible, but who knows? I'll wait to pass judgment, I think.
Okay, yeah. No, good plan. We enjoyed your enthusiasm, though, Helena. Okay, so let's move on to story number two. Now, this one is a past Rural Youth Europe chairman. We should probably have a klaxon or something when we have a chairman on, because we had Russ last week, and hopefully we'll have many more in the future. So this is our next story from Lucas from Switzerland.
Hello Europe, this is Switzerland calling. My name is Lukas Helfenstein from Landjugend, the Swiss Rural Youth Organization, and I'm a past Rural Youth Europe chairman. On my first rally in Sweden 2010, I almost got fined for not having a valid ticket. Almost everyone travelled to Copenhagen and took from there an international train to Sweden where the rally was held. The Swedish host even organised the train tickets for everyone, as it was kind of a special ticket deal for couples and always two persons had to share a ticket together. On the way home, Paddy from Ireland was supposed to be my ticket buddy. Then, the last evening of the rally, just before the big farewell party started, we all were given our tickets. Paddy came over to me and wanted me to take the ticket. But, as I was afraid if we lose the ticket, I refused and he kept the ticket. Then the next morning, without any sleep for me, me and Paddy were supposed to be on the early train. While we already were getting into the train, I started to look about Paddy and couldn't find him. And then just someone told me, yeah, Paddy's not here, he slept over. Then the doors of the train were already closed and they realized, I'm on this train without any ticket. And as it was an international train, there is a ticket control for sure when crossing the border. No idea how exactly it worked out, but at the end, tired, without any sleep, and still a bit hangover, but at the end I arrived safely in Copenhagen.
Okay, so they arrived safe in Copenhagen at the end, and Paddy from Ireland there not being a very good travel buddy.
Oh, I couldn't imagine that. Not Paddy. I don't know what he's saying there.
Oh, do you feel like that's plausible that happened?
I'd probably say no in both of them. Yes, probably is plausible.
Okay, right. Well, hopefully for Paddy's sake that one was the lie. But we will go on to our final story. So finally, we have our third story from Noda from Georgia.
Hello, Europe. This is Georgia calling. My name is Noda Pantsulaya from Umbrella, and this is my story. When I was in Switzerland with my Ruralias project, I met really nice, interesting, and funny people. We did so many things together. One of these was spiritual ritual, yeah. We were moving around to the castle with torches. We read so many prayers. We also sacrificed great Swiss cheese and ate it on a spit. Actually, it was pretty funny and delicious.
On that note, on the delicious cheese note, that was not from Georgia. Sacrificing Swiss cheese during a spiritual ritual.
The thing is, I know that I was on that trip, but it just happened to be that night when they went out on the tour with the torches. We had a board meeting that night, so I missed that evening. So I obviously knew, I know there was the torch tour, and there was a lot of cheese. So that sounds like something that possibly they did. So no, there was a lot of fondue that we didn't get because we had to cook ourselves. So
okay. It was.
Yeah, I don't know.
So the question is, did you miss out on the spiritual ritual to sacrifice the Swiss cheese whilst you were on your board meeting?
I think that could be a truth, that one. It's put my mind into doubt now. It's just, I surely would have remembered if someone come back and said, "Oh, we'd sacrifice cheese," but I'm leaning towards Helena being alive.
Why do you think that?
I don't know, because I think the other two sound more plausible. I suppose there's definitely believable aspects in the other two. There's a believable aspect in Helena's story, but I think I'm more drawn to believe in the other two.
Okay, so is that what you're going for? You're going to say that the lie is Helena with her embarrassing toilet story?
I believe so, and I don't think I've got much more to add on that, but I think I'm going to go with that story as a lie.
Okay, so you're going with Helena, and I can now reveal that, in fact, the lie is Nodder from Georgia.
Oh!
So the sacrificing of the Swiss cheese didn't actually happen.
I'm glad I didn't miss out on the sacrificing of the cheese now. Yeah. I would have enjoyed that, I suppose.
I love that you thought that one was probably true. Because, I mean, it is a big part of... any Swiss trip.
It was like the torch tour happened. I saw them leave, and I knew there was fondue and a lot of cheese going on. So it's like something I suppose could happen.
What was this torch tour?
Well, put it this way: well, we had the courtyard. Everyone had a big torch, like you would see in like Hawaii or somewhere like that. Like just a big torch and a stick on fire.
Wow.
And they're walking around the town then on the town under torchlight. That's what I can remember. Obviously, I just saw him leave and I saw him coming back. So,
well, word on Helena, if you're listening, you fooled Niall there. Helena, when I messaged Helena, she actually told me she had a huge long list of embarrassing stories that she could have told us. So sounds like that's quite a common thing.
Well, you fooled
Helena.
Me anyway. So. And the one I thought I definitely knew was the one I got wrong. So it was...
Yeah, I know. Yeah, and Paddy was the rubbish travel buddy for Lucas back in 2011, I think, in Sweden. So
won't let him live that one down.
No, absolutely not. Well, thank you very much, Niall, for playing our Campfire Stories game. What's coming up in the world of Rural Youth Europe? Have you got anything to report on?
We've got our General Assembly coming up in a few weeks' time. It's the Friday of that week of August. And then hopefully we've got a few more things that we can reveal in a few weeks, a few months, something over the autumn.
And I also noticed that on the social media, we've been announcing some of the results for the awards.
Yeah. This year we decided to run a couple of different categories just to see. I think this year has been an unusual year. So we thought, we'll try something different. And there's been the participation, and I think people have really got behind it, and it's been good to see that there's been a spread of awards across our member organisations, and everyone's sort of getting involved. So it's great to see.
Yeah, I was very excited to see on the day that we were recording this, the Inspirational Club Junior category was announced, and it was a club from my county in England, Crews Mortchard, which I was very excited to see on social media today. So that was fun.
Yeah, no, it's like I say, congratulations. It's always good to see, especially when you've got a lot of younger members involved. And I think it's been really appreciated. We've had a few messages from members, sort of saying thank you very much. And to be honest, it's really nice to see, but from my point of view, it's more thank you for getting involved.
Yeah, definitely. And between now and the next episode of Rural Voices, which will come out at the start of July, to keep up to date on all things Rural Youth Europe, make sure you are following our pages on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter.
You can all subscribe on the Rural Youth Europe website, or I believe we're on Spotify as well, and probably a few other different platforms that are not so tech savvy, but I'm sure there's more.
Yeah, wherever you get your podcasts, we're bound to be there. Thank you so much, Niall, for coming on.
No problem. Thank you very much.
You are listening to Rural Voices, the Rural Youth Europe podcast.